In evolutionary biology, there is this like really persistent misconception that the biggest, strongest creatures are the ones guaranteed to survive a cataclysm.
Right. Yeah, people always think of the T-Rex.
Exactly. We look at the T-Rex and think, well, with all that raw power, it definitely should have made it. But when the meteor actually hits, muscle mass really doesn't matter.
No, not at all. It's a brutal filter.
Yeah, the creatures that make it through are the most adaptable, the ones capable of entirely rewriting their survival playbook while the sky is, literally falling.
Because survival in those moments isn't about dominance, right? It's about the speed of adaptation.
Welcome to the deep dive. We are so thrilled you're here with us today because, looking at the stack of sources we've gathered, the tech industry is having a massive meteor moment.
Oh, absolutely.
We're unpacking the evening edition of the Taken Knight newsletter from May 22, 2026. And the through line connecting all these stories is exactly that adaptation as survival.
Yeah, the old playbooks are just burning right now.
They really are. Today, we are looking at an AI giant's public relations meltdown, a breakthrough in microscopic earbud chips, Apple frantically moving geopolitical chess pieces, and a $1.5 billion video game gamble.
When you lay all those out, it becomes pretty clear. I mean, whether we are talking about a trillion-dollar monopoly desperately trying to patch the walls of its software garden, or, a mid-tier challenger trying to topple giants with custom hardware, the entire industry is in a state of absolute flux.
So true. Let's jump right into a company that desperately needs a new playbook right now, which is OpenAI.
Yeah, they really do.
The data in this newsletter paints a jarring picture of their public trust crisis. According to a recent NBC News poll, only 26% of U.S. voters currently hold a positive view of AI.
Wow, that is incredibly low.
Right. And this has moved way past internet grumbling. The backlash is bleeding into the physical world. College commencement speakers are actively being booed just for praising artificial
I saw
intelligence.
that, yeah.
And last month, someone actually threw a Molotov cocktail at OpenAI CEO Sam Altman's home in San Francisco.
It's intense. The societal narrative has completely fractured. OpenAI has realized that, possessing revolutionary technology means absolutely nothing if the public views you as an existential threat.
Yeah.
So to fix this, they brought in Chris Lathain as their chief of global affairs. And in Silicon Valley, he is literally known as the master of disaster.
Master
Yeah,
disaster.
he did crisis communications in the Clinton White House. He guided Airbnb through massive local regulatory battles, and he built a formidable crypto super PAC.
And Lathain is rolling out a very aggressive three-pronged strategy here. First, he is pushing what he calls reverse federalism.
Right.
Instead of waiting for the federal government to figure out AI rules, OpenAI is lobbying individual states to pass harmonized laws that mirror the frameworks in California and New York.
It's the Airbnb playbook all over again.
Exactly. Second, they are pouring resources into a super PAC called Leading the Future, backed by over $100 million to directly influence elections.
Huge amount of money.
Huge. And third, they are deploying policy proposals essentially as PR. They're floating ideas like a 4-day work week and taxes on AI labor to signal they are thinking about the human cost.
Right. And I just want to jump in here and make it explicitly clear to you listening that we are just neutrally reporting the contents of the newsletter right now.
Yes, absolutely. We aren't endorsing the tech industry's lobbying efforts or the politicians opposing them.
Exactly. We're completely impartial here. But looking at this strictly from a strategic lens, it's fascinating to see how the political landscape is shifting. Opposition to AI has literally become a campaign asset.
Like a badge of honor on the trail.
Yeah. Candidates are tweeting pushback against these tech super PACs as something to brag about.
And I really have to question Lathain's underlying logic here. He claims OpenAI wants to avoid the dystopian view of the future, but also avoid the naive Bob Ross view where everyone is just painting watercolors on the beach while algorithms do all the work.
Right, he wants to thread the needle.
But this reverse federalism strategy, I mean, it looks a lot like they're trying to franchise their own preferred regulations before the federal government can step in.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
It feels like building the airplane while lobbying the FAA to lower the safety standards.
And that tension is exactly why the strategy is misfiring. Lathain is executing a highly sophisticated political playbook, but the company's internal actions keep contradicting the public messaging.
Oh, for sure.
The newsletter highlights a massive debacle in Illinois that illustrates this perfectly. OpenAI accidentally threw its support behind a state bill that included a sweeping liability shield.
Wait, meaning they wouldn't be legally responsible if their tech caused damage?
Precisely. The clause meant AI labs wouldn't be liable if their models caused catastrophic harm, say, hallucinating a medical diagnosis or triggering a financial flash crash, as long as the company had published a basic safety framework.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. When the Illinois governor publicly called them out, OpenAI had to frantically backtrack and claim it was a drafting oversight.
You don't accidentally draft immunity from catastrophic harm. That feels like a symptom of a much deeper identity crisis.
It is. Former employees from their economic research unit recently quit, citing that the company is morphing into a pure advocacy arm.
Wow.
They claimed inconvenient research about job displacement was being suppressed. So OpenAI is fundamentally torn between its original nonprofit mission to benefit humanity and, well, the reality of being a hyper-commercialized entity. They're struggling to adapt their corporate soul.
Well, while OpenAI wrestles with this massive cloud-based societal narrative, other players in the industry are completely bypassing the cloud to adapt at the physical hardware level.
This is such an interesting pivot.
It really is. Soundcore, which is Anchor's audio brand, just dropped the Liberty 5 Pro and Pro Max earbuds. And they pulled off something incredible. They got a Guinness World Record for call clarity.
Which, in a market suffocated by Apple's AirPods and Sony's hardware, breaking through with a world record is a monumental technical achievement.
It's massive. They achieved a GMOS score of 3.76, explicitly beating the AirPods Pro.
Unbelievable.
The secret weapon here is a custom processor they co-developed called the ThusS AI chip. And the sheer processing power is staggering. It uses adaptive ANC 4.0, analyzing audio data 384,000 times per second using an 8-microarray.
That's just wild.
And it claims to recover up to 65% of the audio detail that gets compressed and lost over Bluetooth. Plus, the Pro Max version is only $230 and includes a 1.43-inch AMOLED touchscreen directly on the charging case.
To really understand why that 65% recovery metric matters, though, we have to look at how Bluetooth actually works.
Okay, let's unpack that.
So Bluetooth inherently destroys audio. To beam music through the air from your phone to your ear, it aggressively compresses the file, literally chopping off the high and low frequencies.
It's like taking a high-definition photograph and sending it as a blurry text message image.
Exactly. What this Thus AI chip does is act like a highly advanced predictive text engine, but for sound waves. Instead of just playing that damaged compressed file, the AI processor on the earbud guesses what those missing frequencies were supposed to be and rebuilds them in real time before the sound hits your eardrum.
That's so cool.
And that GMOS score you mentioned. That stands for Global Mean Opinion Score. It's a rigorous scientific metric of human perception. It measures how natural and undistorted a voice sounds to the human ear during a call.
Okay, I understand the predictive audio rebuilding, but here's where it gets really interesting for me. I have to ask, do we truly need a dedicated, branded AI chip physically inside an earbud?
You're skeptical.
A little bit. I mean, is the industry just slapping the word AI on what used to be called a really good digital equalizer?
That's a fair question. Mm-hmm. But it is fundamentally different from a standard equalizer.
Mm-hmm.
What Soundcore is doing represents a massive architectural shift called edge computing.
Edge computing.
Right. By putting the AI processor physically inside the earbud, so at the edge of the network, rather than in a distant server farm, you solve massive bottlenecks. First is latency. If you want live translation or real-time ambient noise filtering, it has to happen instantly. You can't wait for the audio to travel to a cloud server and back.
Right, and there's also a massive privacy angle there.
Huge. Your audio data, like your private conversations, they never leave your physical body. It's processed locally. Plus, dedicated custom silicon is vastly more battery efficient than running complex algorithms on a general purpose Bluetooth chip.
Makes sense.
Soundcore is proving you don't need to be a trillion-dollar monopoly to build custom silicon and democratize these premium features.
And that shift to local edge-based hardware is brilliant because it avoids messy software ecosystems entirely.
Yes, it bypasses them completely.
Speaking of which, right now, the biggest software ecosystem of all Apple's App Store, walled garden, is facing an existential threat from governments. On June 18, 2026, Apple is being forced to overhaul its App Store age ratings in Australia and Vietnam.
The walls of the garden are literally being legislated away.
They really are. In Australia, Apple is entirely eliminating the 15 plus age rating. Now, any app that features unrestricted web access, frequent medical information, or loot boxes is automatically getting bumped up to 16 plus, say.
Uh-oh.
And in Vietnam, they are forcing a very rigid four-tier system. 00 plus ed, 12 plus ed, 16 plus ed, and 18 plus ez.
Zoom out, and you see this isn't just an isolated regional quirk. Governments globally are prioritizing child online safety and forcing the tech giants to adapt.
It's happening everywhere.
Brazil and Singapore recently implemented strict 18 plus blocks that require absolute age confirmation. And again, looking neutrally at the policy landscape here in the U.S., Congress is heavily debating the Kids Online Safety Act, or COSA.
Right, and just to reiterate, we are completely impartial on COSA and the politics surrounding it.
Absolutely neutrally reported. But the point is, this wave of regulation is crashing down simultaneously all over the world.
So for you listening, this means the era of downloading an app and having the exact same digital experience in Sydney, Hanoi, and Chicago is officially over.
It's done.
Your digital world is fracturing into highly localized territories. So the days of the unified global app store are over. It's turning into a fragmented archipelago.
That's a great analogy.
But here is the massive technical puzzle for Apple. Their entire brand identity is built on user privacy. How do you verify a user's age in Brazil or Australia without demanding a government ID or a face scan, which would, you know, completely ruin their privacy-first reputation?
It requires a profound technical pivot. Apple cannot just ask users to upload their driver's licenses to an Apple server. That is a data breach waiting to happen.
Right, definitely.
Instead, they are having to deploy cryptographic techniques like zero-knowledge proofs.
Okay, wait. Explain how that works in practice.
Think of it like a bouncer at a club. Normally, you hand the bouncer your ID, and they see your name, your address, your weight, and your birth date.
They see everything.
Right. A zero-knowledge proof is like having a secure lockbox on your phone. The phone checks your digital ID locally within a secure hardware enclave, and then simply beams a cryptographic thumbs up to the server saying, yes, this user is over 18.
Oh, wow.
The server never sees the ID, the name, or the birth date.
That sounds incredibly complex to implement globally, though.
It is an administrative nightmare, especially for the developers. A solo app creator can't just click E for everyone and ship their game to 150 countries anymore.
Because the rules are all different.
Exactly. They have to understand the specific legal definition of, say, frequent medical info in Australia versus a completely different definition in Vietnam. If they fill out the App Store Connect questionnaire incorrectly, their app could be forcibly re-rated or entirely banned in specific regions.
So third parties are eating into Apple's accessory market. Oh, wait, no, let's back up. Governments are legislating Apple's software walls, but ironically, third-party manufacturers are brilliantly piggybacking off Apple's underlying hardware networks to build superior products.
Yes. This is such a fascinating dynamic.
Let's look at the SwitchBot wallet finder.
This is a perfect case study in a company turning a competitor's infrastructure into their own competitive advantage.
The Apple AirTag is a great device, but it is 8 millimeters thick. If you slide that into a leather wallet, you look like you're carrying a golf ball in your pocket.
It's so bulky.
Right. Well, SwitchBot developed a tracker that is 2.5 millimeters thick, literally thinner than a dime. It features IP67 water resistance. It only costs around $18 to $25. And crucially, it uses Apple's massive Find My network to track your items.
That's the genius part. By tapping into the millions of iPhones already out in the world, SwitchBot didn't have to build a tracking network. They just built a better tracker.
But wait, I'm stuck on one specific practical pushback here.
Okay, what is it?
This tracker has a 3-year non-replaceable battery. Even though it integrates amazingly with smart home routines, like turning off your lights when your wallet leaves the house, isn't a non-replaceable battery just guaranteed future e-waste?
Yeah, it's a totally valid environmental concern.
Because 3 years and it's garbage.
Right. But from an industry and consumer psychology standpoint, what SwitchBot has done is shift the economic model of the tracker.
How do you mean?
At a $20 price point with a 1,000-day lifespan, it goes from being a luxury gadget that you maintain to being a disposable, essential utility. It becomes a subscription to peace of mind that costs you less than a penny a day.
Oh, I see. So Apple built the global highway system with Find My, and SwitchBot just built a cheaper, sleeker car to drive on it?
Precisely. Apple accidentally created a booming platform economy for its own hardware competitors. SwitchBot is adapting to Apple's ecosystem better than Apple is.
So third parties are commoditizing app as accessory market, and regulators are squeezing their software revenue. Where does a giant like Apple find new growth to survive?
They find it by physically moving the chessboard to entirely new geographies.
Exactly. The Omdia report in this newsletter blew my mind. In the first quarter of 2026, iPhone shipments surged 31% year over year across Latin America.
That's huge.
And in Mexico specifically, an unbelievable 80% explosion in sales, pushing Apple into the number three vendor spot there.
Which is crazy because Latin America has traditionally been dominated by much more affordable Android devices.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing an 80% surge for a premium device like the iPhone in a single quarter is an absolute seismic shift in the market.
But I have a pointed strategic question about this. Was this 80% growth a brilliant, calculated chess move by Apple, or did they just get incredibly lucky because Samsung fumbled the bag by delaying the Galaxy S26?
Honestly, it's kind of the definition of a perfect storm.
Okay.
Samsung's delay of the S26 left a massive vacuum in the market, absolutely. But Apple didn't just passively absorb those sales. They actively adapted their supply chain to be ready for that exact moment. Apple has been aggressively nearshoring, shifting manufacturing and supply chains from Asia into Mexico.
Which drastically lowers their distribution costs and import taxes for the region.
Exactly. When the iPhone 17 launched, they had the local supply chain ready, just as their biggest competitor stumbled. And the strategic timing couldn't be more critical here.
Because of China.
Right.
The Chinese market, which has historically been Apple's growth engine, is cooling off due to fierce local competition from brands like Huawei. Latin America, with its 650 million people and a rapidly digitizing middle class, represents Apple's new geographic lifeline.
Because selling the phone is just step one. They need the hardware in people's hands to unlock the real revenue.
The hardware is just the Trojan horse. By securing this massive new user base in Mexico and across Latin America, Apple is locking millions of new consumers into their high-margin services ecosystem.
Right. Apple Music, iCloud storage, App Store cuts.
Exactly. They successfully adapted their geographical focus right as their traditional markets began to stagnate.
That Samsung delay proves a brutal truth, though. Launch timing and marketing execution can make or break a product. If you miss your window, someone else takes your market.
Oh, absolutely.
And right now, no entertainment company understands this better than Rockstar Games. Let's look at the unprecedented gamble of Grand Theft Auto 6.
The financial weight resting on this single piece of software is, it's almost difficult to comprehend.
The numbers in the newsletter are dizzying. We have a confirmed release date of November 19th, 2026, a development cost of $1 to $1.5 billion.
Insane.
Projected fiscal year 2027 revenue for Take-Two, the parent company, of $8 to $8.2 billion. Yet there has been no trailer 3. There's been no price announcement. Total deafening silence from the studio for over a year.
It goes against every conventional rule of modern digital marketing, where companies feel the need to bombard you with content every single day to maintain relevance.
Right, stay in the algorithm.
Yeah. Strauss Zelnick, the CEO of Take-Two, was actually asked about this. He compared GTA 6 to a Tom Cruise Mission Impossible movie, arguing that even with a massive built-in audience, you still need a heavy marketing push. But Rockstar's actual behavior is a masterclass in scarcity marketing.
It's the Willy Wonka golden ticket strategy. By showing absolutely nothing, the fans do the marketing for free through sheer speculation.
They really do. They scrub pixelated leaks. They make three-hour YouTube breakdown videos of a single promotional image.
But if you hide the gameplay for this long, aren't they letting expectations inflate to a level that is mathematically impossible to meet when the game actually drops?
You've isolated the exact vulnerability there. The strategy is brilliant for saving early marketing dollars and controlling the narrative, but it creates a knife-edge scenario.
Yeah, because Rockstar isn't selling a game right now. They're selling a blank canvas.
Right, and the danger of a blank canvas is that millions of fans are painting their own perfect, impossible version of GTA 6 on it. When you spend $1.5 billion and cultivate this level of mythic, silent hype, perfection becomes the baseline expectation.
Wow.
If the game has bugs or disappoints in November, the backlash won't just be a bad review cycle, it would be catastrophic. Rockstar is betting their entire legacy on the assumption that their internal adaptation of the open-world genre will flawlessly match the impossible standard they've let the fans build in their heads.
Okay, let's take a breath and quickly recap the incredible journey we've been on today. We watched OpenAI fighting for public trust, deploying political operatives to rewrite state laws.
Yep.
We saw Soundcore shrinking the AI revolution into a custom predictive audio chip inside your ear. We navigated the fragmentation of the App Store and watched Switchbot brilliantly hack the tracking game. We saw Apple's Mexican gold rush and finally the billion-dollar silence of GTA 6.
It's a massive amount of strategic maneuvering to process. But as you go about your day, I want to leave you listening with one final provocative thought to ponder on your own.
I'd love to hear it.
Think about this. Whether it's OpenAI leaning on super PACs, Apple rewriting its age verification algorithms to satisfy foreign governments, or Rockstar selling a $1.5 billion game with zero gameplay footage. Wait, no, let me restart that. Rockstar selling this massive game with total silence. We're entering an era where a tech product's success is no longer about the code itself. It is almost entirely about mastering mass psychology, lobbying, and timing. The best technology doesn't win anymore. The best adaptation does. What does that mean for the next generation of engineers?
That brings us right back to the Meteor, doesn't it? The T-Rex had the best hardware, but it couldn't adapt to the new atmosphere. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the tech and night sources. Keep adapting, stay curious, and keep questioning the headlines.